Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings, family. We thank you so much for joining us once again to our weekly Thursday night After Wind call. And the topic, like our usual topics, are very vital. This topic is very vital, like the topic that we continue to bring to you. And the topic is the Great Reset, Big Tech and Woke Capitalism, or ULU, which means us lifting us. We will be right back and continue, get started with this conversation, and we ask you to participate. Once again, family, we thank you so much for joining us tonight. Our roots begin in Africa, not somewhere else, begin in Africa. And tonight, we're going forward with another vital conversation. The title, once again, is The Great Reset, Big Tech and Woke Capitalism, or ULU. And we're here every Thursday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and we're heard around the world. We have members around the world. And we gather here to have a sober discussion of the economic and political plight of black people and the global cooperative economic model that provides an exact method for gaining economic and political self-determination. And we are going forward every day building the global machinery for our economic freedom and sovereignty and the methodology to pass it to forward to future generations. And I'm Brother Thurman. I'm an Uplifting Us member, and we invite you all to join and participate with us in this conversation, and make sure that I will give you further details about that in a minute. And joining me on with the conversation tonight and leading this conversation is Uplifting Us member Baba Chibaka. and Baba Shabaka. Greetings. Glad to have you with us and give some good words to the people today.
Yeah, greeting, Brother Thurman. It's glad to be with you. Always a pleasure to be with you. And I'm very much inspired by our conversation and hopefully information that the members and the listening audience can take with them. And I'd like to greet also the family, and I look forward to your participation.
Good word, good word. Thank you so much, brother. And family, we invite you to join the conversation. Make sure that you take notes, because it's vital that you comprehend, you receive this information, and use it to help to raise the consciousness and bring clarity to your family all over the world, sisters and brothers. Can reach us by telephone to call in with questions or comments at 929-477-2789, and you press the number 1 on your keypad to speak, and you would be recognized, and we would put you on the air. And if you have any, if you have not looked at Hulu, look into Us Lifting Us, make sure you go to www.usliftingus.com and take a good close look at Us Lifting Us. And on the web page, you would also be able to sign up for email notices concerning the Dare to Win. And also you would be able to leave your contact information if you have any questions or you need someone from Us Lifting Us to communicate with you and to answer any of your questions or concern. And you can also email us at info@usliftingus.com. That's info@usliftingus.com. And once again, the vital topic tonight is the Great Reset, Big Tech, and Woke Capitalism, or Hulu. And this is a question we want you to participate in. The Brother Shabaka, moving right ahead, what is the Great Reset and its relationship to Big Tech?
Yeah, thank you, brother. I really appreciate that question, and it's a very important question. Let me briefly attack and address that question by trying to define what the Great Reset is. And not to get all convoluted in some of the financial and economic terms that usually describe it, I'll just phase this to you. A lot of times, you know, like when you're using an appliances and the appliances has a surge and then it stops operating. So usually what you do, you go back, it has a reset button, you hit that reset button, and it starts as if nothing had happened before. Well, that's essentially, in economic terms, that's exactly what the Great Reset is. It's redefining how the economy, not of a country, you know, not of a society, but a world, all right, should look like, given the problems that is occurring that a lot of people inside that society, inside that world, are unaware of. And let me give you a real crisp example. In the United States today, we have a gross domestic product of about $17 trillion, probably beyond what we can count. That means all the goods and services that is produced are in the country. The government now collects $4 trillion in tax revenue. All right? It has a debt of $30 trillion. I want you to keep those figures in mind. The gross domestic product is only $17 trillion, so it doesn't make enough money, and that's with all the goods and services produced by corporations and companies and businesses. Even if you gave all the money to create satisfy its debt, which is almost twice that of the gross domestic product, all right, it only collects now $4 trillion, that's the federal government, of tax revenue. I want to keep it on the national level right now. I'm not dealing with states. Now, of that $4 trillion, $1.5 trillion is the interest that has to be paid such that the government doesn't default on the $30 trillion loan. Now, a lot of people are not aware of that, but that's currently what we have right now, you know, give or take, all right, a few billion, all right? And so in order for it to operate on the federal level, in other words, you know, the government stimulates the economy but putting money into the economy to get it functioning, in order for it to operate, the federal government must spend $6 trillion. Let me give you those figures again. $4 trillion to collect in tax revenue, $6 trillion that it needs in order to operate, $30 trillion is what it is in debt to, and $1.5 trillion, and it collects $4 trillion in tax revenue, and it has to pay of that $1.5 trillion, all right, to cover the interest on the debt of $30 trillion. That's why you see, you know, a lot of talk around, and a lot of times you might not understand what they're talking about when they have to go before Congress, all right, to increase the debt, all right, because they're spending $6 trillion after a point in time. They don't have enough money, all right, to spend, all right, so they have to go and deal with the national budget, all right, and they're always spending more than they take in. All right, the Great Reset says that you can't exist on that, all right. They've already forecast that Social Security, which is a fund, all right, is going to be broke in less than 10 years, at least in the early to mid 2030, all right? All right, Europe has a similar kind of situation. In fact, they're a little bit more what you would call socialistic, you know, and because they have everything is provided through the government, all right? And so they have high and large pensions, all right? And so they're in much worse shape than the U.S., all right? And so, but that's a big economy. It's one of the largest economies on the globe, with a population of about maybe 450 million people. It's one of the biggest trading partners of the U.S. government, which is why there's such a concern, supposedly, all right, of what's going on between Russia and Ukraine. Now, having said all that, and so what they're trying to do is, look, before the catastrophe happens, in other words, they run out of money, they're going to reset it. Now, you might say, well, how do they do that? How are they able to do that? Well, that is to direct you to digital currency. Digital currency means you can make up a currency, all right, from an algorithm, from a program on the computer, all right? And therefore, you don't run out of money. Like the Fed, the Federal Reserve, one of the things that the Federal Reserve does, all right, that it creates money. It prints money. If it runs out, that money is not really based on anything except the interest that people have in maintaining an economy and just print money. And the same thing they can do with the digital currency. They're running out of dollars to print. All right, so all they got to do is give you a card that's digitized the income on there that you'll get from working. All right, that goes into a central bank, and then it is dispatched to you every time you need it or when you need it. Supposedly, that's how it's supposed to work. Now, obviously, what I describe, it shows you the big tech relationship that it has. The digital currency, which is necessary to do the reset because they're running out of dollars. They can't print enough dollars, and they owe too much. So they're going to reset the economy based on a digital currency. And as a consequence of that, they need this big tech to be able to do that. Now, let me play for the family a clip of an interview that was done. I try to make it as clear as I possibly can, and I'll have a couple words to say about it, of an interview that was done by Mike Wallace. For some of you my age and maybe a little long, you know that Mike Wallace was associated with 60 Minutes. Mike Wallace did this interview in 1958. You know, I was just barely playing marbles, you know, in 1958. In this interview, Mike Wallace, all right, interviewed a gentleman by the name of Aldous Huxley, all right? Now, he's a reporter, and so he does a lot of research. I want you to listen to what he says from his research.
This is Aldous Huxley, a man haunted by a vision of hell on earth. A searing social critic, Mr. Huxley, 27 years ago, wrote Brave New World, a novel that predicted that someday the entire world would live under a frightful dictatorship. Today, Mr. Huxley says that his fictional world of horror is probably just around the corner for all of us.
This was in 1958.
We'll find out why in a moment.
The Mike Wallace Interview, presented by the American Broadcasting Company in association with the Fund for the Republic, brings you a special television series discussing the problems of survival and freedom in America.
Good evening, I'm Mike Wallace. Tonight's guest, Aldous Huxley, is a man of letters, as disturbing as he is distinguished. Born in England, now a resident of California, Mr. Huxley has written some of the most electric novels in social criticism of this century. He's just finished a series of essays called Enemies of Freedom, in which he outlines and defines some of the threats to our freedom in the United States. Mr. Huxley.
All right, let me just say a couple of things about that. Don't get too confused about the word freedom. This is what we have never experienced freedom as black people. All right, but this is a key word, all right, that others use, particularly Europeans, because they are under the illusion that we have freedom. And as a consequence of that, all right, their foundation is that anything sinister that will disrupt the freedom that, you know, comes out of the United States. So let Mike Wallace continue with his conversation. Just a minute,
various enemies of freedom are pushing us toward a real-life, brave new world, and you say that it's awaiting us just around the corner. First of all, can you detail for us what life in this brave new world that you fear so much, or what life might be like?
Certainly, I think this kind of the dictatorship of the future, I think it's very unlike the dictatorships which we've been familiar with in the immediate past. I mean, take another book prophesying the future, which was a very remarkable book, George Orwell's 1984. So this book was written at the height of the Stalinist regime and just after the Hitler regime. And there he foresaw a dictatorship using entirely the methods of terror, the methods of physical violence. Now, I think what is going to happen in the future is the dictators will find, as the old saying goes, that you can do everything with bayonets except sit on them. But if you want to preserve your power indefinitely, you have to get the consent of the rulers. And this they will do, partly by drugs, as I foresaw in Brave New World, partly by these new techniques of propaganda. They will do it by bypassing the sort of rational side of man and appealing to his subconscious and his deeper emotions, and his physiology even, and so making him actually love his slavery. I mean, I think this is the danger, that actually people may be in some ways happy under the new regime, but they will be happy in a situation where they oughtn't to be happy.
But let me ask you this. You're talking about a world that could take place within the confines of a totalitarian state. Let's become more immediate, more urgent about it. We believe, anyway, that we live in democracy here in the United States. Do you believe that this brave new world that you talk about could, let's say, in the next quarter century, the next century, could come here to our shore?
I think it could. I mean, I that's why I feel it's so extremely important here and now to start thinking about these problems, not to let ourselves be taken by surprise by the and new advances in technology. I mean, for example, in regard to the use of the drugs, we know there's enough evidence now for us to be able, on the basis of this evidence and using a certain amount of creative imagination, to foresee the kind of uses which could be made in a by people of bad will with these things, and to attempt to forestall this. And in the same way, I think that these other methods of propaganda, we can foresee and we can do a good deal to forestall. I mean, after the price of freedom is eternal vigilance.
You write in Enemies of Freedom, you write specifically about the United States. You say this, writing about American political campaigns. You say all that is needed is money and a candidate who can be coached to look sincere. Political principles and plans for specific action have come to lose most of their importance. The personality of a candidate, the way he is projected by the advertising experts, are the things that really matter.
Yeah, this is during the last campaign, there was a great deal of this kind of statement by the advertising managers of the campaign parties, this idea that the candidates had to be merchandised as though they were soap or toothpaste, and that you had to depend entirely on the personality. I mean, the personality is important, but there are certainly people with an extremely amiable personality, particularly on TV, who might not necessarily be very good in positions of political trust.
Well, do you feel that men like Eisenhower, Stevenson, Nixon, with knowledge of forethought, were trying to pull the wool over the eyes of the American public?
No, but they were being advised by powerful advertising agencies who were making campaigns of a quite different kind than what had been made before. And I think we shall see probably all kinds of new devices coming into the picture. I mean, for example, this thing which got a good deal of publicity last autumn, a subliminal projection. I mean, as it stands, this thing, I think, is of no menace for us at the moment. But I was talking the other day to one of the people who has done most experimental work in the psychological laboratory with this, were saying precisely this, that it is not at the moment a danger, but once you've established a principle that something works, you can be absolutely sure that the technology of it is going to improve steadily. And his view of the subject was that, maybe they will use it to some extent in the 1960 campaign, but they will probably use it a good deal and much more effectively in the 1964 campaign, because this is the kind of rate at which technology advances.
And will be possible.
All right, I'm going to stop him there because I just wanted you to get an idea. All right. Now, he was talking about the use of propaganda. He was talking about the use of dope, all right, and stuff right now. And we see that stuff proliferating in our committee and in our community. This was in 1958, what he saw. This was before the election of Kennedy, John F. Kennedy. In fact, he died during this guy here, Huxley, died during that period, right after the campaign. So I want to bring this up because in 58, he was talking about the development of tools, all right, to pull the wool over the eyes in this case, since he's living in the U.S., he's from Britain, you can probably tell that from his accent, of the wool over the people who are involved in the election. And you see constantly, now you know there's an election coming up right now, and Democratic folks, brothers and sisters in the Democratic Party, were trying to beat down your head to be able to go out there and do that. He's telling you that they already control, that whole process is controlled. Consequently, you know, we have to be leery of it. In addition to that, what I would like to offer the family, all right, he in 1958 linked, all right, some aspects of what I said earlier about the Great Reset, all right, with technology, but he didn't link it all because that was in 58, all right. So now we're in 2022, all right. But now one of the things that's been plaguing us for the past 2.5 to 3 years is, of course, the pandemic. All right, let me play another clip for you, a few minutes of it, by Dr. Fauci, who leads the effort, led the effort. He's been replaced, or he's stepping down, of the strategy that was used supposedly to address all right, COVID-19, all right, the disease that was created, all right, or caused by SARS-CoV-2. In this clip, you have a comedian by the name of Jimmy Dore. He's a white boy. He's conservative. But he gets funny sometimes. He's going to point out some of the problems. He's going to point out the lies. That begins to show you how the propaganda is used. I'll say something about that right after I play it. Now listen to what Jimmy Dore is saying.
So we told you before that Anthony Fauci is an unbelievable pathological liar. That's not hyperbole. The guy, if he's talking, he's lying. And so here he is. He's pretending that we caught another lie. So I'll show you the rest of the lies later, but here's the latest.
This particular show was broadcast September 1, 2022, and he's playing a clip earlier of Fauci being interviewed.
Recommend locking down schools if you have to do it all over again.
Well, you know, again, it's first of all, I didn't recommend locking anything down.
I think Dr. Fauci's lying his ass off. Let's see.
You're asking me questions. You're talking about the CDC is the public health agency, and I have always felt, and go back and look at my statements, that we need to do everything we can to keep the schools open and safe. And
all right, now this is year over.
What was the most crucial decision you had to make during the pandemic, and what was the critical thought process that took you through it?
Yeah, the most crucial, it was a decision to make a recommendation to the president. It wasn't my decision that I could implement. And when it became clear that when we had community spread in the country with a few cases of community spread, this was way before there was a major explosion like we saw in the northeastern corridor driven by New York City metropolitan area, I recommended to the president that we shut the country down. And that was a very difficult decision because I knew it would have serious economic consequences, which it did. And unfortunately, since we actually did not shut down completely the way China did, the way Korea did, the way Taiwan did, we actually did see spread even though we shut down.
First of all, I didn't recommend locking anything down.
I recommended to the president that we shut the country down.
Now, what Jimmy Dore is doing is just going back and forth with the statements that Fauci made earlier and then what he made a little later, all right? And so I thought that this little interaction was comical because if he got on, you can't see it. He has on the screen Fauci making one statement to the interviewer, then he makes another statement that's completely different. So I'll let you hear a little bit more of it.
Recommend lock.
I want to see a feature hearing of Fauci on questioning Fauci.
Yeah.
So someone even made a funnier video about this. Let's watch it.
Do you regret particularly the last one, the shutdown, the sweeping shutdown that some said made things worse?
No, I don't, Neil. And in fact, I think we need to make sure that your listeners understand I didn't shut down anything. I recommended to the president that we shut the country down. And the only way to do that is by draconian means of essentially shutting down the country. We know that we can do that if we shut down.
Well, I think one of the things you really need to do, to the extent that you can shut down temporarily the country, I think is important.
Well, if I knew at the time that shutting down would have such a dramatic effect on control.
All right. Now, I would just play a little bit more of the clip, a little move ahead. It's funny because he's just basically going through and looking at how he's contradicting himself. Now you might say, well, why didn't the public pick up on this? Well, see, the media, the politicians, administrators in the federal agencies know that we have short memories, and the reason for that is very simple. You know, They will give us something that produces fear and stress in us. All right, and so therefore, you know, when you produce fear and stress, we're not thinking distinctly. All right, in fact, we either trying to decide whether we have to stay and fight something or if we need to get the hell out of there, run. All right, so therefore, once you go through that episode, all right, you forget about it once the pressure, all right, that's confronting you is relieved. And so when another statement comes out, you pick it up as if it's new. And you forget about the statement that was made about a month or two earlier or a year earlier. All right. And so, but you know, there's commentators, particularly like this guy here, Jimmy Dore, all right, who try to keep cognizant, and he tries to track down the video because he's a conservative. His job is to get the administration that's currently in there, which is right now is Biden, out, so whomever he wishes to push in there later. And how he does that is to discredit the current administration. That's the whole thing about politics. Let me pay a little bit more, and then we'll jump on something else.
Killed millions of people? That would make them the biggest mass murderers in the history of the world.
Well, I mean, all I'm saying is OJ spent more time looking for the real killers.
That's right. So there you go. And you want to see a funny video of him just nonstop lying? Here we go.
People should not be walking around with masks.
Let me just state for the record that masks are not theater.
Wearing a mask might make people feel a little bit better.
Masks are protected.
But it's not providing the perfect protection that people think that it is.
There has not been any indication that putting a mask on and wearing a mask for a considerable period of time has any deleterious effects.
There are unintended consequences. People keep fiddling with the mask and they keep touching their face.
And can you get some schmutz sort of staying inside there?
Of course.
You do not need to wear a mask indoors if, in fact, you've been vaccinated. But good that you're vaccinated, but in a situation where you have people indoors, particularly crowded, you should wear a mask.
So even if you are vaccinated, you should wear a mask.
If, in fact, you are vaccinated, fully vaccinated, you are protected, and you do not need to wear a mask.
All right, I'll stop it there. I think you get the he's contradicting himself. And as I said before, we don't really listen. We don't play because number one, we're not in politics. We're out trying to earn, survive. All right, and then we didn't get catch. We don't catch some of this stuff. But some of these people do, as Jimmy Dore is one of the people that follows this. This next clip I want to play is extremely important. And it's the last one that I'm going to play of Fauci. But the importance of this particular clip is this. Fauci is in a session, all right, of government officials and businesses, all right, illustrating and conversing about the significance of what they plan to do in this 2.5-year period. Let me play that for you because that is really a bombshell.
Why don't we blow the system up? I mean, obviously we can't just turn off the spigot on the system we have and then say, hey, everyone in the world should get this new vaccine we haven't given to anyone yet. But there must be some way that we grow vaccines mostly in eggs the way we did in 1947.
In order to make the transition,
that's Fauci speaking,
getting out of the tried and true egg growing, which we know gives us results that can be, you know, beneficial. I mean, we've done well with that. So something that has to be much better. You have to prove that this works. And then you've got to go through all of the clinical trials, phase one, phase two, phase three, and then show that this particular product is going to be good over a period of years. That alone, if it works perfectly, is going to take a decade. And
all right. Now, I want you all to pay attention to that. All right. This is 2.5 years. The vaccine came out roughly about a year after it was declared, you know, that we had a plandemic or pandemic, as they called it. All right. All right. Fauci is saying in this clip that process, all right, that a vaccine or really any medicine that is given to people has to take at least a decade. A decade. This is what Fauci, this isn't what Chewbacca's saying. This is what Fauci is saying. Consequently, as a result of that, they didn't take that time. So when they place this out under what they call an EUA, an emergency use authorization, that emergency use authorization indicates that this is an experimental drug. It has not gone through the full trial period, all right? And therefore, you must have consent and be made aware of everything that could go wrong with this drug. There should not be any mandates. That's why it's over about 100 lawsuits going on right now. I know that you don't know about them. Well, the news is part of the corporate structure here. You're not supposed to know about them, all right? But there's a whole bunch of lawsuits going there because a lot of people have been injured and lost their lives. Now, Brother Thurman, let me stop here just in case, you know, you might have some questions you want to shoot through, or maybe some other people might be on the line that might have a question or two also.
Brother Shabaka, yes, thank you. Thank you so much for everything that you shared, and I can get the picture of the the video clips. They're interesting. They're showing that Dr. Fauci has difficulty being consistent. And got another point, a question I wanted to ask you, but before we move into that question, I'll just hold that question because we do have someone on the line that has a question or comment, and let's move to give them opportunity to participate in this conversation. And caller with the last
Thank
four
you.
Numbers, 46, yes, brother, 46400, give us your name and where you're calling from, and give us your question or comment.
I'm calling from the South. My name is Pianchi. You know, this pandemic, like 9/11, one of two of the biggest hoaxes I've seen in my lifetime. And I've seen quite a bit. And the president don't have the authority to shut down the country. There's nowhere in the Constitution that gives him that responsibility. That should be left up to families on what they do, and also your local practitioners. And even the CDC have came out later on, and B. Glenn, they're not a government agency. They don't make policy. It's make suggestions. That herd immunity or natural immunity is just as good as vaccination. Humankind has been around for eons based on natural immunity and natural selection. That's just the way it is. So that's shutting down the country, iron people because they wouldn't take vaccinations, having somebody else looking at your sincerity in your religions when you said your religion forbid that. All that stuff is a bunch of bull crap, and people need to be sued on it. That's all I got to say.
And thank you,
brother.
So much,
really.
Brother.
Yeah, go ahead, Brother Thurman. Didn't mean to interrupt you.
Yes, Brother. Brother Shabaka. Yeah, thank you, Brother Pianchi. And Brother Shabaka, we want your response to what he was just talking about.
The brother is correct. It's because we, the general public, you know, we lack the information, and they come out and scare us, and so we're not able to put the things together to see that this is a plandemic. You know, it's a fraud. All right, in order for the pharmaceuticals, all right, to make money. Now that last clip that I played of Fauci. All right, in which he was discussing, you know, about the vaccines. He was mostly discussing in that clip about the vaccines for flu. And on that panel were people who used to be in the federal government who were now members of the pharmaceutical industry as employees. Okay, all right, so that gives you sort of like the in and out of how that connection and how there's conflict of interest are going on, which allow them to be able to do as they currently do. I'm going to play this other clip, which is important, because this clip is a Dr. Fleming, and Dr. Fleming is going to give you some, he's going to prove, he has proof, and it's from his testimony and from his evidence, you know, that a number of the lawsuits that I spoke about earlier is going on. So this is Dr. Fleming, and this was his interview in July 27th of this year.
Are you prepared to testify under oath here today that COVID-19 is a bioweapon?
Yes, ma'am.
Dr. Fleming, we've asked you to come testify about whether COVID-19 and related vaccines are a deliberate bioweapon attack on the United States. Madam Court Reporter, can you please identify yourself for the record?
My name is Karen Esser, Texas CSR number 5536.
Thank you. Can you please swear in the witness?
Dr. Fleming, will you raise your right hand? Do you swear the testimony you give today will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth will help you God?
I do.
Dr. Fleming, do you consent to this testimony being used in any appropriate proceeding?
Yes, I do.
First, I'd like to cover some of your qualifications. You have a impressive 90-page resume. I'm not going to go through that, but very briefly, are you a medical doctor?
Yes, I am.
So therefore, you have an MD degree, as it's known.
I do, yes.
And what is your area of specialty?
Nuclear cardiology, and internal medicine.
And do you also belong to professional medical associations?
Yes, I do.
Are you a fellow of the American College of Physicians?
Yes.
And are you a fellow of the American Society of Internal Medicine?
Yes.
And you also hold a PhD?
Yes, I do.
And in what field?
Physics.
And you also have a law degree, otherwise known as a JD?
I do.
And are you an inventor in the medical field?
Yes.
And very briefly, can you explain the type of medical inventions that you've invented?
The ability to image the body and determine what types of disease processes are going on by looking at metabolism and blood flow.
And do you hold patents for your inventions?
Yes, I do.
Is it fair to say you're familiar with the world of medical patents?
Yes.
You have the ability to read and interpret medical patents?
Yes, I do.
And are you also an author of professional papers?
Yes, sir.
And approximately how many?
Somewhere between 400 and 500.
And you also serve on the editorial board of professional journals?
On editorial boards and review boards for the journals.
And briefly, what does a reviewer in a professional journal do?
The obligation is when somebody submits a paper for publication for reviewers to take a look at that material to determine if it's scientifically valid, to determine if it makes a difference in the field, and to make recommendations back to the editorial board about whether the paper should be accepted or revised or rejected for publication.
Are you prepared to testify under oath here today that COVID-19 is a bioweapon?
Yes, I am.
You wrote a book posing the question, is COVID-19 a bioweapon, correct?
Correct. The function of the book was to provide information that the general public could look at and also to provide evidence for the legal system and the medical system to understand the gain-of-function research that's been carried out over a couple decades, to show where the monies came from, to show what papers were published, showing what types of gain-of-function research occurred, and to show the patents, to clearly lay out two decades worth of work that's been conducted, funded primarily by the United States, although other countries have been involved, and to show how there is no evidence that SARS-CoV-2, the virus that causes COVID-19, no evidence to show that it's naturally occurring, no animal model for it, and to show the type of research that's been done with coronaviruses funded by the U.S., supported by NIAID, NIH, Department of Defense, monies that went to Peter Daszak at EcoHealth, to Ralph Burrick at the University of North Carolina, to Qizheng Li at the Wuhan Institute of Virology, and to several other universities around the country, including in the state of Texas.
Did you also look at the genetic code of the SARS-CoV-2 virus and especially the spike protein?
We did, as well as Professor Luc Montagnier, who is the gentleman who discovered the HIV virus, and several other individuals that we note in the book.
And based on that review of the genetic code, that informed your conclusion that this is a bioweapon.
Right. So the Biological Weapons Convention Treaty states that any adjustment or modification of a biological agent like this virus that doesn't provide a benefit for mankind is a biological weapon. These particular changes in this virus, including the PRRA insert, which are amino acids that were inserted that are very critical for the purine cleavage site for this virus to infect, the insertion sites that were made with HIV and simian or ape-like HIV equivalent viruses, the prion like domain at the top of the spike protein, as well as the HIV glycoprotein 120.
Okay, what he's talking about is when he looked at it, and again, the argument was that SARS-CoV-2 naturally occurred, all right, and as a consequence of naturally occurring, infected a lot of people. There's some question of the number of people that supposedly were infected. Now, what Dr. Fleming is saying is that when you look at this thing in the Petri dish under the microscope, it is not naturally occurring based on their examination of a SARS virus. A coronavirus, all right? Now, the coronavirus is the kind of virus that you might get from a cold, all right? Sometimes it might elevate if the cold is serious enough to a flu, all right? But it's not the kind of thing supposedly that they claim is responsible for the death of millions of people, all right? So what Dr. Fleming, what I wanted you to hear is that, number one, the lies that Fauci said, number two, that the it wasn't naturally occurring by this expert witness. And number three, all right, going back to what Huxley says, that this thing has been in motion and planned, you know, for 60 years. All right. So when we look at all of that, and then we wonder, you know, why black people, African people are behind this, because we're not planning 60 years in advance. My last clip, and this is the real ringer, because then it takes us from the what I claimed earlier, and that was the virus, what they claim is a virus, was intentionally, you know, used, number one, to kill off a large number of older people who had comorbidities. That means they had a number of diseases already. The young people were not affected by this. And that the draconian measures of lockdown, all right, exacerbated the situation to keep, number one, us away from each other, have us not communicate, and if we communicated, we communicated online. Once we communicate online, we are tracked, all right, so they keep, so that's a message of surveillance to see what we're talking about, what we're thinking about, all right. And then the other thing is have us scared of each other because they came out with this thing that, asymptomatic infection, which means that you could be infected with the virus, don't have any symptoms, but you could infect somebody else, all right, which was an outright lie. And then the WHO came out and said that, and of course they had to repeal that as a consequence of pressure on them from the pharmaceuticals that had other aims. Now, this last clip I'm going to tell you, then I got to talk about the significance of Hulu, because that is extremely important, all right, as we begin to say, how do we counter this stuff? This last clip is one that was done about a few days ago by a Dr. Rechtenwald. His name is spelled Rechtenwald. First name is Michael. I'd like you to look him up. All right, so this is his comments. He talks about the woke capitalism that's part of the title of this discussion that we're having today.
As well. So, Michael, thank you so much for joining us today. Good to be here, Michael. Thanks for having me.
Yep, great having you as well. And I thought we could start our interview today with a really almost like ridiculously simple question, which is, what is the Great Reset? We hear a lot about it, but getting an actual clear explanation as to what this Great Reset is referring to is a little bit more difficult. So what is it?
That's a broad question indeed, but the basics are this. The Great Reset is a project that's being initiated particularly by the World Economic Forum, and it is a project to institute a new kind of economic system called stakeholder capitalism. And stakeholder capitalism is an invention of the founder and chair of the World Economic Forum, Klaus Schwab. It is a means of redistribution, but in particular, it is a way of coordinating an entire economic system based on meeting the sustainability goals of the United Nations Agenda 2030. That's really what it comes down to. And so it all comes back to Agenda 2030, the UN's sustainability goals, the 17 of them, and 169 subtopics within those. And this is a means to create sustainable stakeholder capitalism. That's the broad stroke. There's many elements to it besides the economic, and I can talk about what that economic system leads to, what it really amounts to. But there's also, as you mentioned, the Fourth Industrial Revolution, which is the technological element of the Great Reset. And this is ushering in a whole slew of technologies that are basically high-tech, digital, AI-oriented and implemented technologies, inclusive of things like digital identity, central bank digital currencies, the Internet of Bodies, and the Internet of Things, of course, but also such things as the metaverse, which you also mentioned, and elements of transhumanism.
All right, let me stop there because we're getting ready to run out of time. What Dr. Reckenwalt is saying that he talks about Klaus Schwab, who is CEO of the World Economic Forum, all right, an organization of over 1,000 top corporations, all right, in the world. All right, these are top corporations in the world, all right, that comes together each year to assess, you know, how things are going in the world, not in the state of Pennsylvania, not in the state of Florida, not in the United States, not only in the UK, the world, because these corporations operate throughout the world. In addition to that, all right, there are also some of the top potential politicians, all right? In fact, Biden had attended a couple years ago the World Economic Forum. Trudeau, who is the Prime Minister of Canada, also attended the World Economic Forum. And so, and then also the Prime Minister of Australia. And so when you think of these draconian policies, well, you get an idea because they test this thing. You know, in other words, they throw this stuff out, they see the response, and they come back and modify later on. And he talks about this woke capitalism, which is now a capitalism. The capitalists are no longer what he considered national. All right, they don't care. You don't have a Rockefeller that thinks of himself as an American capitalist. Rockefeller family would think of themselves as a capitalist of the world. Okay, and therefore would work with others. The, if you remember, what happened as a consequence of the lockdown, 40 to 50%, now you might not be aware of this, 40 to 50% of black businesses disappeared in the past 2.5 to 3 years. we had a total of 2.6 million black businesses. About 130,000 of those 2.6 million were businesses that had more than staff, that had more than partnership, that had more of a sole proprietorship. In other words, they employed people, all right? Only about 130,000 of them, all right? And a lot of them went, but some of them were sustained. The mass number of businesses that that dissolved were out of that, were 40 to 50% out of that 2.6 million, you know, of sold, which were mostly sole proprietorship. And we're still feeling the effect of that right now. I can tell you, as a member of ULU and in the finance committee, we have seen the effect and impact on us in ULU. Now, I talked about ULU, what ULU can do. Most of this, what you heard being described, is from the top down. The World Economic Forum, which orchestrates this, 100 top businesses, all right? And their leadership is part of this forum, all right? The politicians that they have is from the top down. They're part of this forum. If you notice, our objective is to build from the bottom up. And you've heard us, and you may have heard, and you can go on the website and get more information on it, particularly if you're a member, if you're new, get information by joining, is we work from the bottom up. We call these ULU-based communities. Used to be called ULU-based collectives, but we call them ULU-based communities, all right? These objectives are just like cells. They go out into the community and assess the economic, social, and cultural landscape of the localities that they're in and build a strong economic base such that, all right, it can resist the leverage and domination of these forces coming from the top down. It takes us, all right, to be able to do these as we spread out throughout the communities, all right, and we're not just talking about one community. We're not talking about a community in Miami, Florida. We're not talking about a community, just a community in Atlanta, Georgia. We're not talking about a community, you know, just in Detroit, Michigan. We're talking about communities of black folks in which we get the economic, social, and cultural strength to be able to resist the stuff that's coming down. All right, we're global. Well, that's good because then we match the globalness of these woke capitalists or what he calls stakeholder capitalists who are working from the top down. All right, so you can see as we interact with this, we're building up the community. We're also building up the knowledge, all right, to be able to support and be able to refute, all right, the kind of opposition that is using the stakeholder capitalistic structure, all right, to dominate not just the United States, but globally, because their intent is global. If their intent is global, then our intent is global, and black people on the face of this earth are global. All right, and you got to have a global mechanism in order to repel or at least resist the imposition of the globalness of the opposition. And brother Thurman, I see that we're running out of time. I wish I had more time to talk about this because there's so much that that was mentioned in that clip, those clips that I played that may need to be translated if people didn't hear them that well or didn't quite understand them that well, all right, because a lot of this stuff was taking place in meetings, conversations. Like the clip with Dr. Fleming was over an hour and a half long. I only played a few minutes of it, in which he testified that this was a bioweapon. In other words, it's not what it was supposed to be, as was talked about at the beginning of the pandemic in the late 2019, early 2020. So, brother, I don't know if we have any more questions or give you time to ask a question or to the close out the program, but it's a pleasure, and I'm glad you gave me the opportunity to talk and share this. But there's more information that will be coming out, and we got to know this stuff. You know, as we plan, we have to know what the opposition is doing, all right, to neutralize our planning. We have to do the same thing.
You said it so well, brother. We have to know this stuff. And I give much praise to what you brought forth tonight. And if I had questions, the major question would be, you said that, you know, like the last piece that you read is over an hour long, Dr. Fleming, and other vital pieces. The question that I was asked of to you was, will you continue to analyze and bring forth this kind of information, and will you come back and help us to greater understand that we must be listening to what they're saying and the things that's out there. It's evidence, not something that you or we made up, but you're bringing forth evidence, and it's essential because, as you said, it's about the world, not some state, but the world. And such cruelty, you know, including when you talk about the plan to kill off older people and all of these kind of things. And I want to give you much praise, and I'm sure that the listening audience around the world would do the same thing. And definitely, please come back. And yes, brother.
Yeah, I definitely would appreciate coming back. I said the world, and it was initially to kill off the old people, but it's a depopulation of anybody, particularly people who have the highest production rate. And right now, that's Africa, and that have the highest birth rate in the world. And, of course, when we look at the United States, it's the Hispanics and blacks, although they're working very hard on us, all right, to reduce our ability to produce and to be able to counter. Their thing is to control the population growth. The reason for that is very simple, because they have to control the consumption. They have to control production and consumption. All right. You know, we got a population of 8 billion people, you know, facing us right now. All right. The Europeans are not that many. They tested the vaccine and found out it could be effective. All right. But the so-called darker complected world, all right, was not taking the vaccine, which is primarily what they want. They have the highest birth rate. All right. So there is things to buy off their leadership. There's things to, like he talked about that, and I like the family, and I'll get back to you, but I like the family to look at what he talked about, the UN goals with these 17 points. All right, these UN goals with these 17 points, most of it was to try to convince the so-called developing world, third world, they call it, developing world, all right, not to industrialize. All right, because they under the guidance or claim that it will create greenhouse gases, all right, if they industrialize from the carbon dioxide. All right, so that means that only the West will have the technical tools to produce and to distribute and control consumption. All right, the so-called developing world will not have that capability if they do not industrialize in some form, and not only industrialize, but also to do other kind of things that increase their production to feed their people. All right, and we have more people to feed than the Europeans. All right, so there is a giant genocidal imprint associated with this great reset that is not necessarily talked about. And it's all hooked up with the health industry, so-called, all right, in the production of medicines or vaccines, supposedly to address the health issues that affect us globally, all right? And obviously, we don't have the information. They'll tell us anything. And, brother, let me not interrupt you anymore, but I want to let you know that it's not just the elderly. It's the seniors or what have you. It's the reduction, and this could also go to probably race or at least ethnicity.
Yes. Yes, brother. And thank you for that further clarity, so that we know that, as you, what you said, it's not only the older people and race is involved. And, brother, you've got to continue to do your work, the research, and you've got to come back to us. We are holding you responsible to do that, brother. Thank you so much. And thank you to all of the sisters and brothers around the world that's listening to this conversation and those that will be listening, whether it's tomorrow or next week, because it is archived on Blog Talk. And we're here every Thursday, and our focus is to bring you vital information and help us to get greater clarity that we've got to get free of this chaotic, deadly capitalist system and the things that they have always done, and we've got to embrace our own system, and us lifting us has the model that's already there for us to come together and change the economics in our favor, because either we take control of the economics of our community or we will forever be at the mercy of others, and that would be insanity. Brother Baba Shabaka, once again, I thank you for all of us, and thank everybody that was on the call. Yes, brother. And we'll be back again next Thursday, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Be well and be safe. Thank you.